Well, hello everybody. That's your first clue that I've got a cold. So welcome to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you to think outside the box. My name is Patricia Corey, and it's an honor to be here with you again this week. I want to start the show by thanking all of you who have sent your condolences for my loss. It's a dog, but it's a dear friend that's gone over to the other side. So I'm out of my grief and I'm back in the power zone. But I do want to thank you for all your wonderful messages. It means a lot. It means a lot to care about each other that way. Right. Okay. Then no melodrama for me. I would like to, I've told you he's coming back, and I'm not going to waste any time with introductions because 1 hour is not long enough. 1 day is not long enough to talk with Jim Mars, the wonderful author, conspiracy realist, I'd like to call him, as I call myself. Jim Mars, you know him. He's an award-winning journalist. He's written The Alien Agenda, Rise of the Fourth Reich, Ruled by Secrecy, one of my favorite books, The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy. And he is back talking about the occult history of the planet. That's his new book, and that is not the precise title, but it doesn't matter because we'll be talking all about that. Jim, thank you so much for coming back on my show.
Hey, Patricia, it's a pleasure to be with you. And yeah, let me clear up about the title. It's Our Occulted History. And as I point out right away, the term occulted does not mean it has anything to do with devil worship or vampires or werewolves or anything that we think of usually as the occult. I use it in the astronomical sense. You see, when the moon eclipses the sun, that's called an occultation, okay? It occulted the sun, which simply means that it's hidden or masked. It hides the sun. So our occulted history actually just means our hidden history. But I use the term occulted in the astronomical sense because there is an unearthly aspect to it. You there?
There he is. Jim, I was just filling in the blanks while you were coming back on. I was saying this is another one of your gigantic books, and it took me, I got only through a couple of chapters and was like, wow, this book is going to, we're only going to be able to talk about a couple of chapters, I would imagine. But yes, I think that my audience knows and understands the meaning of occult. But please go ahead and talk about what you meant about the occulted information in our solar system.
Right. Well, there's a lot that we don't know about our own planet, and there's a lot we don't know about our own solar system. Interestingly enough, although there are a lot of mysteries and conundrums and anomalies about our solar system, such as how did it come into being in the first place, what happened to the asteroid belt? We all know it's in an orbit going around further out from Mars. And even as a school kid, when I learned about the asteroid belt, my first thought was, well, that was a planet that had been there that somehow blew up or, fell to pieces. This seems to be the case. Interestingly enough, we have tablets in existence that were produced 6,000 and 7,000 years ago and even more by the ancient Sumerians, who would press their styluses into these clay tablets and then bake them, turn them to stone, and they're still in existence. In fact, it's quite ironic that we can know more about the ancient Sumerian civilization than we do about the Egyptian or even the Roman Empire, because they were writing on papyrus and that, disintegrated, burned up, got destroyed in wars and everything else. These tablets still exist, and they tell a fascinating story about how our solar system was created, and it has to do with a 10th planet that goes under various names. They called it Nibiru, and it's on an elliptical orbit that goes far outside the solar system and then circles back around. One of its orbits, one of its years, is actually would to us would be about 3,600 years. And every time it comes through our solar system, it creates a disturbance and impacts the Earth more or less. Their story is that thousands and thousands of years ago, there was a huge planet on the other side of Mars called Tiamat, and it was a large watery world, and that on one of the pass-throughs by Nibiru, one of its Nibiru's moons struck Tiamat and demolished about half the planet, which remained in Tiamat's orbit. And this, of course, is what we now know as the asteroid belt. Fascinatingly enough, according to the tablets, the other half of Tiamat was knocked into an orbit closer to the sun from Mars, and it went into orbit there, and over thousands and millions of years coalesced into the Earth. And that's where the Earth came from. And this is why we find extraterrestrial material on the world, because it had picked up and still has a lot of the organic material that had originally been on this planet called Tiamat. Fascinating stuff. And, of course, that happened a long time ago.
That's how you explain in the book why the asteroids are considered containing water reserves and frozen water, right?
Right, exactly. In fact, the ancient Sumerian tablets refer to this splitting up of Tiamat into two separate worlds as the passing of the waters. It also explains a lot of other things, such as where does comets come from, these dirty ice balls that fly around our solar system, and they haven't been able to actually explain where they come from and why they're all buzzing around. Now, what's really interesting, and I think the reason we need to keep an eye on this, is because although Nibiru is not due back until about 2060, I think that it is now approaching our solar system, and it very well could account for what we've been calling global warming, okay? And the reason I say this is because it is not global. The ice caps on Mars are diminishing, means they're melting. The ice on some of Jupiter's moons is melting. The outer planets are becoming more luminescent, which means they're heating up. So, in other words, is the world getting a little bit warmer? Apparently so, but it's not. Sorry, Al Gore, it's not because of driving our SUVs. It's because whatever it is solar system wide. Something is affecting the solar system, including causing the sun to act erratic and not following the normal predictions of what the sun should be doing. And one of the theories, one of the explanations for why this is happening solar system-wide is that the approach of Nibiru. Okay, well, wait a minute. If that's the case, how come NASA doesn't tell us about that? Well, I think that it's very clear, at least to me, that in the hallowed halls of government, they have decided that it might be upsetting to some folks. It might impact the profit line or the Dow Jones, so they have decided to keep this quiet, and they poo-poo any talk of this approaching body, and yet the evidence seems fairly clear that there's something going on. There was mainstream news accounts back in the 80s that said because of the perturbations in the orbits of the outer planets, they believed that there was this another body out there. So they were acknowledging it 30 years ago, but now it's gone quiet and we don't want to talk about that.
Well, but there could be a number of different things that are occurring. I mean, we do know that the sun and our whole solar system is really activating, but are you open to the possibility that there are other reasons other than Nibiru coming in?
Oh, of course. I don't know for sure what it is, and there could be other things going on. But that seems to be a very straightforward explanation. And some of the other theories have very little, if anything, to support them.
I wanted to ask you to go into the big question that's surfaced at the moment is whether or not the moon is an artificial satellite or if it's a natural body. And you go into that right away in your book. And I read one sentence in your book and said, whoa, we're going to have to talk about this. In your book, you discuss the anomalies of the moon, and you said, and I quote, after six moon landings between 1969 and 72, and the return of some 842 pounds of rocks and soil samples, and here's the clatcher, plus the placement of five nuclear-powered scientific stations on the lunar surface. I never heard about this.
Well, of course not. That's secret stuff. They don't tell you about the space fleet either that Gary McKinnon stumbled across when he was hacking into the Pentagon computers. But even though they're still trying to extradite him from England and trying to put him away for life in prison, even though they had freely admit that he didn't take any sensitive and national security type material. Well, didn't do anything to harm national security, but what he did was found out the names of the craft and the officers and the people that are manning our space fleet.
Okay, I have no problem with the secret because we all know that we get 0.0001% information. But I found it very entertaining that you dropped that on the reader and didn't elaborate further. So the placement
you're probably right. I probably should have elaborated on that, but there is just so much. There is so much. As you move further into the book and you find out about the cover-ups that have taken place with ancient sites like Baalbek and Göbekli Tepe and Machu Picchu, and then you find out about the giant skeletons that were being reported found back in the 1800s, and there were newspaper articles about them, magazine articles, and then today it's like, well, that doesn't happen, and yet you can go on the internet and you can find dozens and dozens of photographs, most of them, again, very old, taken back to the first of the 20th century or even into the 1800s, of people with these giant bones. And when I'm talking about giant, I mean, we know about tall people that get up to 8, 9, 10 feet, you know. These are 15, 16. These are huge. Yeah. And what happened to all that? Well, it all got taken into the Smithsonian Institution, and then I guess it just got buried away back in a warehouse along with Indiana Jones's Ark of the Covenant, you know. They just bury it back there and then act like it's not happening. And but people go, yeah, but wait a minute, didn't the Smithsonian Institute, this great scientific institution? Well, yes, it is, but what they don't realize is that since the late 1800s, it's been an official government body. It's owned by and run by the government. Well, the government doesn't want us to know all kinds of things. And people say, well, the government can't keep a secret. Au contraire, there at the end of World War II, there was about 26,000 people working on the Manhattan Project, which was our development of the atomic bomb, and nobody talked. Nobody knew about the atomic bomb until we dropped one on Hiroshima.
Even today, you know, it's just amazing with all this victim consciousness and the Patriot Act and all this terrorist attacking. A lot of people forget that it was the United States that used the weapon of mass destruction on another country. And, you know, to remind people about that.
That's right. But, and during the Cold War, I found it quite interesting that Russia, communist Russia, the Soviet Union, that we were told was the evil empire and the bad guys, they consistently said they would sign a pledge never to be the first to drop a nuclear weapon, and the United States never would sign such a pledge. I just always found that kind of fascinating. I'm assuming that's because we couldn't very well say we wouldn't do that since we already had. But I don't know why we couldn't have said, okay, we did it once, but we'll never do it again. We'll never be the first to launch a nuclear bomb. Okay, and if everybody said that and stuck to it, then nobody'd ever launch a nuclear bomb, right?
Right, but unfortunately,
but we never would say
Earth,
that.
On Earth, on planet Earth, it seems like that determination to create peace, to direct ourselves toward peace, is not the initiative underway. So let's hope that sanity will reign eventually. Let's get back to the moon. So you told us. I just thought it was so cute the way you dropped that and then went on.
Well, and also there's, you know, the thing is there's something happening on the moon. Somebody's on the moon. Now, it may be us, may not be us. If it's not us, then we're really on to something, right? But this is nothing new. Ever since the development of the telescope, the people have reported seeing lights moving around on the surface of the moon and shadows and things moving. Back in the 50s, they saw what appeared to be a bridge straddling a chasm on the moon, and then other people saw it, and then a few months later, it was like gone. They've had some of the, as you know, Patricia, I wrote a book about the Army's remote viewing program, which was the use of a psychic ability to penetrate secrets, and some of these military-trained remote viewers have seen human figures working on the moon. So, you know, apparently there's somebody up there, and there's structures that have been seen there. There's something that juts out a mile above the moon's surface, and it's called a spire. We don't know what that is. And then there's just so many strange things about the moon. Beneath some of the largest craters, right in the dead center, is the ground-penetrating radar and has picked up heavy metallic masses under these things called mascons. And nobody knows quite what they are. The moon creaks at certain times during the month as it approaches the Earth, almost as though it had a loose plate somewhere. Then when the gravitational pull becomes strong enough as it gets closer to the Earth, it bulges the plate and causes a kind of a squeaking. There's been waves of winds of water that pass across the surface of the moon. And this is all, you know, verified by NASA. And yet this is totally contrary to what I was told in school way back there, where they said the moon was just this cold, dead place, nowhere, no magnetic field, no nothing. And, of course, we now know that's not true. There is water. There is a magnetic field. There's a lot of things about the moon. To me,
there's water on all kinds of planets now, planets and moons. It's finally being leaked to us. I mean, anybody who's paying attention has seen these oceans and rivers on Mars. They keep telling us it's a dead planet, and pictures are just like, get real. There are forests, there are rivers, oceans.
Yeah,
so where
exactly.
There's water and sun.
But when NASA takes a photograph taken miles above the Martian surface and then colorizes it with a lot of red and it washes everything out, it just doesn't look like, you know, what it does. I have seen some unretouched NASA photographs of Mars where the sky is actually pretty blue. Okay? But see, now we're getting back to this cover-up. See, some of the fundamental questions of life that we all should be asking ourselves is, who are we? Where did we come from, and why are we here? Okay? But no, we're not even supposed to think in those terms. And if we do, then there's such a morass of cover-up, obfuscation, distraction, anything to keep us from trying to learn what's really going on. Instead, we have this prefabricated little history that we're taught. You know, the Egyptians used the slaves to drag the huge limestone blocks through the desert for hundreds of years to build the Great Pyramid. Horse hockey. It didn't happen, folks. How do I know for sure? Because, number one, who were the slaves of the Egyptians? The Hebrews. Who were among the most well-documented people in the history of the world? The Hebrews. And where in all of their writings or all of their oral traditions. Where does it ever say, by the way, Uncle Herbie hauled stones through the desert all his life, you know? It didn't happen, but the key thing is, Patricia, is that in regard to the Great Pyramid, and I've been there, I've seen this for myself, there is obvious vertical, deep vertical water erosion on the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx, which means that those two structures sat out under heavy rains for many, many years. And yet, geologists will tell you that there has not been significant rainfall on the Giza Plateau for more than 10,000 years. That means the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx were there more than 10,000 years ago. Well, that leaves out the Egyptians. Their civilization only sprang into being about 5,000 years ago.
Well, for starters, the wonderful Hakim, who was a keeper of the indigenous wisdom of the Kemetians, we had lots of conversations about that, and he said, you know, actually the pyramid is 50,000 years old.
There you go. Of course,
I'm sure you're familiar with Edward Scotch, who John Scotch, I can't remember his first name, I'm sorry, who identified the erosion that you're talking about on the Great Sphinx, and also dated it way, way beyond the story. The official story. And when I go to Egypt, what I see is the standard story is they made all these different pyramids, all these attempts, and finally created the masterpiece. And what I see is the masterpiece was there, and these poor little guys kept trying to reproduce it and kept getting all these lopsided.
Yeah, and they kind of fell over. They just couldn't make it work. And the thing is, too, I think that originally the Sphinx probably was simply a giant statue of a lion. But at some point, one of the Egyptian pharaohs decided he wanted in on the act, and so they got up there and they chiseled away the lion face and tried to turn it into a human face.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. What do you think about the face on Mars, the structure there? Do you think that's a Sphinx?
I see the face on Mars every morning.
That besides your beautiful face.
When I look in the mirror, that's right. No. I think the face on Mars. That's an interesting thing. I've kept up with that, and of course, at first they show it. And they say it looks like a face, and then they show a very low profile taken at a certain point of the day when the sun's low, and it kind of washed it all out. It's, no, there's really nothing there, folks. And then you see more where they've taken. No, I think there's something there. I really do, and I think it's probably part of, and I cover this in the new book, Our Occulted History. You see, at one point, it seems to be that there was may have been, and there, I think it's almost unquestionable, the evidence is overwhelming, that there was a worldwide, highly technological civilization on this planet long before our written history. And this is probably what gave rise to the legends of Mu and Atlantis and on like that. Except the problem is, see, we're all like the blind man and the elephant. We all got a piece of it. And so people argue that, oh, Atlantis was in the middle of the Atlantic. No, it was in the South China Sea. No, it was on the island of Crete. No, it was the island of Santorini. No, it's Antarctica before the pole shift. And I think probably, maybe they're all correct. They're all right. But I think even more so when you go off and you find out about the pyramids that have been photographed on the moon, the pyramids that have been photographed on Mars in the Cydonia region, right where the face is, and all like that, then you begin to realize this highly technological civilization in our prehistory may have been solar system wide. They may have been on the moon, Mars, and other the planets of the solar system. But of course,
I have not heard that there's been a pyramid identified on
The moon.
Yeah.
No, there's. I can send you three or four NASA photographs. NASA photographs that very clearly show either one giant pyramid or a series of pyramids. The one that got me was the series of small pyramids. I say small, they look small because they're inside a giant crater in the center of the crater. Now, what does that mean?
On the moon?
On the moon.
Oh, I'd love if you send those pictures and I'll share them with everyone who's listening because I have not seen those. That's exciting.
I was just looking at those the other day.
Back to the moon. So you described how when Apollo left I can't think of the technological term.
Apollo 12, when the lunar module fell back on the moon. Yeah, and it crashed, and the moon reverberated like a bell.
Yeah, talk about that, please. The moon rang.
Yeah,
said,
this was
like
this was Apollo 12, and when they lifted off from the moon, the lander fell back onto the surface. The moon crashed onto the surface. And NASA officials said the moon reverberated. It rang like a bell for hours, which indicates that it's hollow, okay? But as Carl Sagan once said, a natural object cannot be hollow. And so we got a real problem there. And in fact, it's kind of funny because one time I was interviewing Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon, and I asked him, I said, what do you think about the idea that the moon is hollow? And he kind of laughed. He said, oh, no, no, the moon's not hollow. But then he just kept going. He says, of course, we do think there may be giant caverns within the moon. And I didn't want to, you know, here's an astronaut. I don't want to get in his face. But I'm thinking, giant caverns, hollow moon, what's the difference, you know?
So I know that you quote David Icke in the book, and David has put forward this message. He's really talking about it a lot, that the moon is an artificial structure. So
right.
What's the point in your case, in your opinion, the moon was dragged, created? How do you perceive this? Do you have a theory of why?
Well, I don't have a theory, but I just look at the facts. Even Isaac Asimov, the famous scientist and science fiction writer, said the moon shouldn't be where it is. And it shouldn't, because that to me is one of the biggest tip-off that there is something very, very unusual about the moon, and that very possibly it could be an artificial means of transportation, an artificial artifact. And how can I say that? Okay, well, picture this. When I was in school, we were taught the moon broke away from the Earth. It had been part of the Earth and broke away and went orbit.
Right.
No, but that's not right. They don't accept that anymore because the moon rocks are not of the same composition as Earth. So that means it came from somewhere else. So picture, here's the Earth hanging in space. Here comes the moon. It goes flying past the Earth. It gets caught in the gravitational field, gets pulled back, goes past the Earth again, gets caught in the gravitational field, comes back again. This is all what would happen if it arrived here naturally by some way. All right, well, that means that it would finally go into orbit, and it should be in a long elliptical orbit, probably irregular, wobbling around outside the Earth, and yet that's not where it is. It's on a near-perfect circular orbit, the only perturbations being those that match the perturbations of the Earth's orbit, and it goes right around the Earth's equator, and it's stationary with one side always facing the Earth. How is that possible naturally? And the answer is it's not. But Patricia, here's our thinking, okay? We know there's no such things as aliens, but we also know that we didn't put the moon there because it goes all the way back to our history when we were just primitives, and yet we know that it couldn't be there naturally, so somebody had to park it there. But since we know there's no such thing as aliens, well, we just won't talk about it. And that's where we are.
What do you think about all the other planets that have moons?
Well, all the other moons, they operate and they have a spin and an orbit, and they're moving, and they operate under the more natural mechanisms of natural moons. It's just our moon that's kind of weird, and although there are a couple others that bear closer study, one of those, of course, is Phobos, one of the moons of Mars, that even Carl Sagan, early in his career, before he got famous and made a lot of money and I think learned to keep his mouth shut, said that he thought he and some Russian scientists said they thought it might be an artificial satellite. And then we've got this moon of Jupiter, Iapetus, that just really, really just pulls at my imagination because it looks like a walnut In fact, there's a ridge that appears to be a mountain ridge, and we've all seen that, but we've never seen one that runs right around the equator of the world. This thing just runs right around the center of this thing, and then it has a huge crater or thing up on the top of it, and when you look at the photographs of Iapetus, it looks nothing less than just like the Death Star in Star Wars. So it really makes one think, could these worlds be artificial? And let me point out to say, both on our moon, Iapetus, Phobos, when we're talking about artificial, we don't necessarily mean that somebody went up and clobbered a bunch of plywood and steel or whatever together to make something. You could make an artificial world by taking an existing natural asteroid and then burrowing into it and using heating devices to melt rock and pour it out, hollow the thing out, and you make an asteroid into a hollowed-out object that could be used as a craft to fly through space. And is there any evidence that might have happened? Well, yeah, look at our own moon and look at the Maria, which is what they call these seas. And it's quite obvious this is very hardened material. There's more hard material on the outside of the moon than inside the moon. And it's almost as though they have gone in the inside of the moon and spewed out lava and spewed out all the heavy metals on the inside of the moon and then covered the outer portion of the moon with this hard covering. And then, of course, one side of the moon has a bulge on it that is made up of even more dense material. And I suspect that's the bugs on the windshield, you know. They're going through space, and they're picking up debris as they go through space, and that accounts for the bulge on the side of the moon. And while we're talking about that moon and its orbit, I might point out that the scientists have shown that the center of gravity of the moon is like 2 or 3 miles off center. Well, if you take a ball and the center of gravity inside the ball is off center by some, and you try to roll it across the floor, it's not going to roll in a straight line. It's going to wobble all over the place. And yet the moon is in this near-perfect circular orbit. So it's just impossible that it would be there naturally like that. Another thing I'll point out is that the moon is at the exact distance away from the Earth so that when it eclipses the sun, the moon perfectly blocks the corona of the sun. Now, to do that, you'd have to be at just this precise distance from the Earth. How do you get is that just a coincidence? I don't think so.
So what do you believe, then, that is would be the motivation? Are you talking about an alien civilization that designed the moon?
Well, we didn't do it.
Sorry?
We didn't do it.
Right, but I'm saying probably not. But what would their motivation have been in your wildest fantasies?
I would suspect that that might have been their means of transportation to get here from the planet Nibiru or from some other world. It would sure be probably the least expensive way of deep space travel. You know, instead of having to build a mechanical device and build some huge structure with all the materials and workmanship that would take, it should be a lot easier just to empty out an asteroid and seal it up real good and then just come fly around in that.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. So are you going to tell us about the 5 nuclear-powered scientific stations on the lunar surface?
Well, there's not much I can tell other than that seems to be the consensus of scientific thought, if they'll talk about it. But, of course, you know, keep in mind we've signed treaties that we're not going to weaponize space, and a lot of people still consider a nuclear plant a potential weapon, so we don't want to say anything about that.
So, in other words, your lips are sealed.
Well, there's nothing else to say other than it's been said and rumored that these plants are on the moon. And if we have any kind of base at all on the moon, then it would only make sense that they would have a nuclear power plant that would provide, you know, clean and long-term energy.
Well, that would be the subject for another whole show, whether or not nuclear energy is clean energy. But we'll let that go.
That's true. it's perfectly clean until it has a problem like all of them have. Fukushima is still spewing.
Of course, if it's a hollow sphere, I guess they could just pour it into the insides of the moon.
Yeah,
but,
See, that's interesting, too. There was a little bit of a slip in the cover-up. The day before the Apollo 11 landed on the moon, the newspapers and the media, Associated Press, was filled with a story about how that Buzz Aldrin and Armstrong had seen light coming out of a crater, either at or near the crater Aristarchus. And this slipped on out because they said scientists theorized that this is signs of the volcanic activity within the moon. But, oops, we got to the moon and we found out there is no volcanic activity. It is cold and dead. So what were these lights? Where did they come from? See? And, of course, we never heard any more about that. Just like we never hear any more about the 10th planet.
I forget who was the astronaut who said that they were warned off the moon.
Right. That was another story that came through here. And that to me makes sense, too, because, you know, we go to the moon 6 times, and that was back in the 60s, early 70s, and then we never go back? What's with that? See, I'm old enough to remember before we went to the moon, and the talk was that we were going to colonize the moon, and we were going to get a lot of raw materials off the moon, and it was going to pay for our space program. But yet, all of a sudden, they said, well, we've got 22 of these Atlas rockets ready to go for more moon missions, but, well, we just don't have the money, and there's nothing much up there, folks, and we just won't go back. And we've never gone back. I mean, how odd is that? That's like building a Rolls Royce from scratch and then say, well, I don't have enough money to buy gasoline. I buy some gasoline, so we're not going to drive this thing. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous, and it lends a lot of support to the idea that we were warned off. Go away and don't come back.
Do you remember who it was, who the astronaut was, who said we were warned off?
I can tell you, I think it's in my book, Alien Agenda. I'd have to go look it up here real quick.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, the problem with your books is there's so much data, you just can't absorb it.
And I'm getting older, I can't even remember. I've forgotten more than I knew or something.
What do you think, Jim, of the information that's been coming out about the time travel program via Andrew Bajago.
Oh, yeah, Andrew Bajago. Yeah, I've met him, and I've talked to him about that whole story, and it's a fascinating story. And, again, I wasn't there, so I can't tell you if it's true or not, but I do have problems with it because I haven't been able – see, when I get things like that, Patricia – and hear these fantastic stories, unlike most of the people in journalism, I don't just automatically blow it off and say, nah, that's garbage, forget it. What I do is when I get something and I'm going, wow, what a story, I put it in what I call my huh file, okay? It's like, huh. So then I put it in the huh file, and then I wait to see if further evidence comes in to support that. Well, I put Andrew Bisaggio's story in my huh file, and I've been waiting on further stuff to come in other than from him that would support that story, and unfortunately there's kind of a dearth. It's not really there, so I still don't know. It's still in my huh file.
The huh file, I like that. But you
just,
do
yeah
talk
you just
about...
look at it and you go huh.
You do talk, you're silly. I mean, for such a profound scientific guy, the huh file is just
Well, cosmic. Come on now. You know, this whole life, this whole three-dimensional reality that we like to think we're living in, it's all just a big swirling mass of energy, and we're actually energy beings, and we're actually existing in a far greater energetic universe, and what we're doing down here is just kind of playing out this great cosmic joke, you know. It's just kind of a, you know.
This is not in your book, but a question for you would be, what do you think of the theory that we're in a virtual reality and we're just being played out?
The electric universe or whatever. Well, mm-hmm. That seems to be the case, and I'm particularly reminded of this when I study what the remote viewers, the people who've gone out with their minds, have been able to do, the out-of-body experience, and have been able to go and travel around and look around the universe, and then people who have had these long discourses with reportedly with extraterrestrials and other non-human entities, and they all pretty much say the same thing, you know, that we're a multi-level universe, and it's all energy. You can, like the table you're sitting at, you can bang your fist on it, and it seems very solid, and you can even hurt your hand, and yet we know scientifically that that table is made up of nothing but compressed atoms. And atoms, exactly. When you take an individual atom and look at it, it's about 98%, you know, nothing. It's just, you've got an electron and a nucleus and some electrons revolving around there, and most of it's empty space. So the whole universe is, everything's just energy flashing around, and I think that what we perceive as reality is exactly that, a perception. And that's why, actually, Patricia, I learned years ago as just a newspaper reporter that there is no reality. There are realities, plural, because I assure you that the reality of the president of the bank is not the same reality as the welfare mother, you know?
It certainly isn't the same as mine, I'll tell you that.
You know, your reality is probably not the same as my reality. So it's all in the perceptions, and that's interesting because I hate to get too philosophical about it, but since it's all in the perceptions, then we can alter our perceptions, or at least how we handle our perceptions. And what I'm saying is that anyone listening to my voice right now, if you think I have a lousy life and I don't like where I am and I don't like what I'm doing and I don't feel like I'm getting what I want out of life, well, change your perception, you know? Just start looking at it a different way.
This conversation helps me make a huge segue into another aspect of the book where you talk about, and I have to make it because I'm running out of time as usual with you, the fluoride, which is one of my bailiwicks. When you're talking about perception, and we know that the global elite is poisoning us deliberately with genetically modified organisms, the vaccine program. What is the basic premise in your book that as with regard to what this is all about?
Okay. Yes, thank you. And I'm glad you brought that up because that is the basic difference. There's a lot of different books out there. You can study a variety of books and learn about all these ancient places and sacred sites and a lot of things that's been hidden to us through our history. What I've done, though, that takes the discussion a little further is to go past the creationism and past Darwinism and point out that there is a third alternative, which is that we are the creations of a extraterrestrial race. Although quickly, let me say, when I say creations, nobody created us. Interestingly enough, in the Sumerian tablets, these Anunnaki, those who came from the heavens, landed on the earth, and then they themselves had the same ethical arguments that we have today, and they said it's not proper. We can't create anything. Only God can create things. So, number one, that shows me that they had a understanding and appreciation that there was a a spiritual being even above them. Okay, they thought in terms of God. And then, of course, to us pure humans who see these guys come and fly around and create big buildings and do all kinds of neat stuff, give us the recipe for beer, for God's sakes. God, they're gods, you know. We saw them as gods. Okay, so, but what I've done is I've taken this increasingly popular topic, which is ancient astronauts, and the idea that there were ancient aliens on this planet, and tied it to another popular topic, which is the New World Order, which is there is obviously a small group of people, whether you want to call them the New World Order or the Illuminati or the, as the Occupy movement calls them, the 1% or whatever. There's a handful of super rich individuals who are trying to run the world. And if you look at their track record, especially over the last couple of hundred years, it's not really good. There's been war, world wars, more wars, more death, more destruction, more economic downturns and depressions and stock market crashes. I mean, they have manipulated us every which way but loose, and their track record's not very good. They're now poisoning the atmosphere, poisoning our food and water. You mentioned sodium fluoride. Sodium fluoride affects the thyroid, which can affect everything in your body. All right, people have aches and pains, and they're getting these strange new things like chronic fatigue syndrome and stuff nobody ever heard of before, and it's because of the poisons that they're putting into us. And it's enough now, I think we can see that it's time to seriously ask, are this 1%, are they even us? Because when you study their literature and you study what their public statements, they want to decrease the world's population. Right. They want to kill us. They want us gone.
It's time we understood that
so we can start resisting that.
I want to add to your comments that also fluoride is very damaging to the pineal gland.
Right.
And that scientists find that, or even when they do autopsies, they find this powder around the pineal gland. And my message to people is that's deliberate so that they can shut down our capacity to see, to be multidimensional beings.
Yes. And why would they want to do that? So they can control us.
Of course.
So that we can be their slave race.
That's right.
You know?
But fortunately, I just have to be optimistic and believe that many of us are waking up and understanding it, and that these reptilians, or whatever we want to call them, will crumble in the wake of the awakening human consciousness, even though sometimes it looks like it's not going that way.
No, it is. It is. And you're right, and I'm with you, Patricia. We need to all be Spartacus, you know. We need to say, nope, and throw it off. And here's the thing, there's more of us than there are of them. If we just get our act together, we don't even have to have some big, huge, bloody revolution. All we got to do is just say no. Say, you know, come on, we're going to go attack Iran. No. Oh, come on, we're going to take up all the guns. No.
Yeah,
oh, come on, we're going to just turn the place into a welfare state. No. Just say no. We're not going to do that.
I'm from the Vietnam era. Our slogan was, what if they gave a war and nobody came?
Exactly. And, you know, I figured that out even as a kid studying about Hitler and the Third Reich. And it was astounding to me how that the German people back in the 30s, you know, who were among the most educated and cultural people in the world, and how they fell for that Austrian corporal with the little funny mustache, you know. And he said, let's march off to war, and they all just goose-stepped right on off, you know. All they had to do was just say, no, we're not going to do that.
But they use the same old rhetoric, which is, they're out to get us, and so we can protect you, so we'll go get them.
That's true.
And it's the same
That's
old
exactly
story,
true.
And now it's the terrorists, and it just, you know, people are manipulated by their fear. When you can put people into that kind of fear, you've got them.
That's right. And when the terrorism doesn't work anymore, and it's fading because, with the exception of the attacks of 9/11, and we could have a whole two or three programs on what really happened there, But yeah. With the exception of 9/11, there hasn't been any serious terrorist attack that hasn't involved a CIA or a FBI undercover agent provocateur, you know. So there really isn't a war on terror, you know.
And I wonder if people make the connection for the reason there is no terrorist attack, if you get my drift.
Yeah, no, they don't. they're too blinded by the fear factor. And every time they start to, you know, every time there's a movement in Congress to rescind the NDAA or rescind the Patriot Act or whatever, then, oh, we have another incident, you know. And, oh, yeah. It sounds terrible. Oh, the guy's going to light his shoe on fire and blow up an airplane, you know. Oh, my God, you know. And they drop it, and we keep all this more and more stuff. But speaking of the shoe bomber, you know, how about the underwear bomber? That's the one I like.
The underwear bomber, I was just going to say, because he goes to the bathroom. He doesn't have the a la moment in the bathroom. No, he comes back to his seat.
Tries to light his underwear or whatever. Well, here's the clinch.
And behold, he just happens to have this, you know, jiu-jitsu black belt next to him that takes him down.
Yeah, that takes him down. But wait, it gets better than that. See, supposedly he's got this explosive called PETN in his underwear, okay? And, he's going to blow up the airplane. Well, wait a minute. I check with my sources in the military, and they tell me that PETN requires a blasting cap to ignite. You can't just light it. Okay, so there was never, he didn't have a blasting cap. So there was never any danger to that airplane. That was a stunt that was used. It was in December of 2011, I think. And it was simply there to stop Congress from rescinding the Patriot Act and
That's
to
right.
Bring in the DNA damaging full body scanners to put into the airports, which happened to be a moneymaker for the former head of Michael Chertoff.
Yeah.
The former head of Homeland
Security. Interesting that they
were
already produced and ready to go, and then just 2 days after the underwear bomber, they were ready to be delivered.
Exactly. It was a marketing stunt, okay? And we're too stupid to figure it out. We fall for it, you know? And
we just keep falling for it
because it's like you said, fear is a real motivator.
Totally. Oh, Jim, you know, it just always flies. You know, I just, next time when you come back, not if, it's going to have to be a 2-hour show because we barely scratched on the surface of your wonderful new book. Ladies and gentlemen, the book is Our Occulted History, HarperCollins, the wonderful Jim Mars. His site is www.jimmars, and that's with two R's, jimmars.com. You got to get your hands on this book. It's another masterpiece coming from Jim. As I told you, he's not a conspiracy theorist. He's a conspiracy realist. That's my new term for the people that are thinking out there. Jim, I've got 1 minute for you to leave a parting thought with my my audience.
Okay, here it is. Don't trust me, okay? Don't trust anything I say. Don't trust Patricia Cordy. Don't trust anybody. Read, study, think for yourself. Use that God-given computer in your head called your brain. And don't fall for the propaganda under the controlled corporate media. There are 5 corporations with interlocking boards of directorships and cross ownership. So there's a handful of people, and these 5 corporations control everything you see and hear. And I'm not just talking about news. I'm talking about movies, films, music, magazines, cable, TV, networks, satellite, books, book publishing, book clubs, you name it, they control it. So think for yourselves. Look beyond the box. Get out of the box and start thinking for yourself.
Perfect. And that's why the show is called Beyond the Matrix, for people who think outside the box of convention. And I want to thank you, Jim. You're a wonderful, thank God you're on the planet, is what I want to say.
Well, thank you. I'm kind of glad to be here, too. This is a fun ride.
with that artificial moon out there.
That's right.
All right, everybody. It's time, unfortunately, I've got to sign out. So thanks to Jim. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. If you've got a friend who didn't get to hear the show, you can listen to the archives on bbsradio.com. And they do charge a little pittance, but please give them that money, because it takes money to keep this thing afloat. So it's just a few bucks. And you can tune into all the archives of all the show hosts on the radio. All right, this is it. Patricia Corey signing out until our next appointment somewhere in the galaxy. And goodbye to Jim. Thanks, everybody.